Well, great. Good morning to you. Thanks for braving the cold and the damp to come out on this, what feels like winter morning. It's down in the 30s. Pretty cold out there. We have some announcements, of course. Holy Mother's Helping Hands. We've been working on this drive now for a couple of months, a little more than 2 months. It's food and clothing for the less fortunate. It's done in cooperation with the Atlanta Community Food Bank. Our goal is 500 pounds of food and $1,800 in donations by December 31st. We're about two-thirds of the way there on the food, which they promised us it would be picked up this last week, but I think they're very busy at this season, so I think they'll come this week and pick up the food. We have two new boxes ready to set up for the other food that will be gathered during December, and we're well more than halfway there in terms of our $1,800 in donations. Each week's e-news, last couple of weeks' e-news haven't because Cindy, our webmistress and communications person, has been taking care of her 84-year-old mother who's recovering from surgery. But this coming week's e-news will have details and links about that drive, flyers that specify what food is needed. Are in the lobby next to the Atlanta Community Food Bank box. Also, there's a clothes rack on the monastery sun porch if you want to bring some warm winter clothing, and you'll notice that some people have brought bedding as well. How sweet. This morning's talk is a part one of a two-parter. Next Sunday will be part two. Of Swamiji's Raja Yoga and the Wizard of Oz. And next week we'll talk about the story that Baum told. This morning we'll deal with the background. I'm very pleased to tell you that Swami Sarvadevanandaji, our head minister, will be with us from Thursday, December 20th to Saturday, the 22nd. On Thursday evening, the day he arrives, the Swami will answer the question, why is Swami Vivekananda so relevant today? From 6:30 to 8 p.m., he will speak at the Global Mall. That's on Jimmy Carter Boulevard in Norcross. Tickets for the event are $10 and include dinner. Reservations are encouraged. Flyers are on the table, also in the lobby next to the Atlanta Community Food Box. The Swami also will give talks here in the chapel on Friday evening, on Friday at 7 p.m. and on Saturday morning at 11 a.m. here in the chapel, Friday evening, 7 p.m., Saturday morning, 11 a.m. Topics to be announced. On Friday evening, the 21st, after the Swami's talk, we'll have a potluck supper and reception for him. So any of you who want to have a chance to greet him have just a moment with him, that would be when you might want to do it. But if any of you want private spiritual instruction from the Swami, please let me know by email right away so that can be scheduled. That's Swami Sarvadevananda, our head minister. He doesn't reside here, of course. He resides in Hollywood and travels all the time. So we're very fortunate to have him in December. Also in December, on December 24th, we'll have our Christmas Eve worship and celebration from 7 to 8 p.m. here in the chapel. Then we'll move into the monastery for prasad snacks, caroling, and other Christmas festivities until about 9:30 p.m. or until you have to be driven away with a stick because it's Christmas and we're having a lot of fun. Holy Mother's birthday celebration this year falls on December 30th. It's on the lunar calendar, so it moves back and forth, but we'll celebrate it on her actual birthday's on the 28th, but we'll celebrate it on the 30th, the Sunday. Brother Dhruva will be here, and he will, of course, first offer us a short talk on Sri Sharada Devi and then perform her puja. That will start at 11 a.m. here in the chapel, At 12:30, or thereabouts, we'll move on to the monastery for our potluck prasad lunch. Those of you who've been around a while know that we have a midnight meditation on December 31st, January 1st. We start at 11:30 p.m. on the 31st and end at 12:06 a.m. on January 1st. Then we'll move into the monastery for fellowship and snacks and so on. Also on January 1st, we'll celebrate or observe Kalpataru Day. That's the day that Sri Ramakrishna offered blessings of liberation to many disciples who had come to see him where he was ailing from that throat cancer at Kashipur Garden House near Calcutta. That Kalpataru Day observance will be from 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. We'll have readings and discussion, followed by fellowship and snacks in the monastery. Are there any announcements that I should have made that I didn't make? Thank you. Okay, we'll open with our regular chant. For those of you who don't know this chant but might like to chant along, there are copies on that chair just on the entrance, by the entrance to the shrine prep room. It's the little white pages. Okay, we'll chant the chant that takes note of why we're here and of our relationship to the divine being. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahano Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. May the Divine Being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the Divine Being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Again, thank you for coming this morning. I'm going to sing. My voice is a little rough this morning, so you'll have to forgive me. But this is a song that is not in Frank Baum's book, Wizard of Oz, but it is from the movie made in 1939 starring Judy Garland. And this song is one of those that she sang. It's iconic from the movie. And see if it doesn't speak to you of the yearning for freedom from bondage that is at the heart of every spiritual journey, which is, of course, what The Wizard of Oz is about. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops, away above the chimney tops. That's where you'll find me. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Birds fly over the rainbow. Why then, oh, why can't I? If happy little bird, bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why, oh, why can't I? pitched it a little high. Oh, stop that. That's just foolishness. But it's a joy to sing that song because it really does recall the movie. For those of us who have seen the movie, it really does recall the film. Judy Garland was so beautiful in the role of Dorothy. Well, so our topic this morning is Swamiji's Raja Yoga and the Wizard of Oz, Part 1, The Background. December is a month for the study of Raja Yoga, a spiritual path often called the Yoga of Meditation. As a Raja Yogi, you use ancient, proven spiritual techniques to quiet your mind and gain control of your attention. Regular daily practice of Raja Yoga increases your ability to concentrate and may lead to meditation. This can unite you with the Divine Presence. Meditation can unite you with the Divine Presence, the source of your being, and liberate you from the cycle of rebirth and death. So that's the context for us, Raja Yoga, and you'll see why. But this morning's talk is about a fairy tale. Albert Einstein once said, "If you want your children to be intelligent, read them fairy tales. If you want them to be more intelligent, read them more fairy tales." That was Albert Einstein, who said, by the way, that his greatest gift, the gift that allowed him to do what he did, was the gift of fantasy. Not imagination, as it is sometimes translated from the German, fantasy. The kind of fantasy that is at the heart of fairy tales. The Library of Congress declared The Wizard of Oz America's greatest and best-loved homegrown fairy tale. Published in 1900, it remains an all-time best-selling book of children's literature. More than 3 million copies had already been sold by the time it entered the public domain in 1956. For us, it's notable that the book's author, L. Frank Baum, was strongly influenced by Swami Vivekananda. A student of theosophy, Baum and his family lived in Chicago in 1893. They eagerly looked forward to the Parliament of World's Religions. Baum, his wife, and mother-in-law were in the audience on September 11, 1893, when Vivekananda received a long standing ovation after the Swami had said simply, "Sisters and brothers of America." Baum attended more of Vivekananda's talks and was captivated by the Swami's best-selling book, Raja Yoga, published in 1896. For those of you who are familiar with Swami Vivekananda's complete works, this is the only thing outside of his letters that he actually wrote. He actually wrote the book, Raja Yoga. The rest of the collection of his complete works, most of that, rather than his letters and a few notes here and there, are transcriptions of lectures that he gave. So this book, at the encouragement of his English devotees in the beginning, they said, "Swamiji, write us a translation of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. Write us your translation and commentary." And so in Chicago, he did that. He sat and wrote this book, Raja Yoga. It was published in 1896. Theosophists of the time, Baum, of course, was a theosophist, theosophists of the time incorporated that book and Vivekananda's lectures on jnana, karma, and bhakti yoga into their teachings. This morning we will study the main character of The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy. We'll study her strange and wondrous journey to the Emerald City of Oz and explore how the spiritual principles and practices taught by Vivekananda are reflected in the characters and events of Baum's evergreen fairy tale. Some of that will be actually in part two next week. Dorothy is, of course, the main character of the story. Her name, a variant of Dorothea, means God's gift, Doron, gift, Theos, God. God's gift. What is God's gift? According to our tradition, it is human life itself. It is a great grace to be born as a human being. Only in this form, our scriptures say, can the truth of your being be fully realized. As Sri Krishna tells Arjuna in chapter 13 of the Gita, this body is the field of action. Is the field of action in universe. There are many fields of action, but this is the field of action, karma, in which you can realize the truth that Krishna goes on to explain and does explain in the Gita. So for us, Dorothy is every person, an adventurer in the field of action. Yes, she's that, yet also, and this is what makes the story so magical, she's also a little girl suddenly set down in a very strange world, trying to find her way home. Isn't that a familiar feeling for you and for me? Her companion is a small dog named Toto. Here's the definition of Toto: a young one, a baby, a child, especially the young of an animal. Toto. And that's what, it's a small dog. But, as you might expect from Baum, it's also a pun. The definition of in toto is in all, completely, entirely, wholly, a little bit of everything. And as we'll see, as we tell the story of Oz next week, Toto is indeed a little bit of everything as needed at the moment. It's really a very interesting little grace note Toto is in the story. As you, those of you who know the story, there are many other characters. Toto plays what seems like a minor role, but if you look at the incidents in which he appears, that little bit of everything is very instrumental. Here's some background on Frank Baum himself. It's from Yoga Symbolism in the Wizard of Oz by James Travers. Quote, on September 4th, 1892, the author of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, L. Frank Baum, and his wife joined the Theosophical Society, an organization that described itself as an unsectarian body of seekers after truth who endeavor to promote brotherhood and strive to serve humanity. 1 year later, the Baums attended the Parliament of World Religions in Chicago, where Swami Vivekananda gave his famous speech about the wisdom tradition of India. Swami Vivekananda's life's work was to share the religious and philosophical values of India to audiences at home and abroad. His discourses included descriptions of the four yogas, approaches to understanding the true nature of being as Jnana Yoga, Raja Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Karma Yoga. Shortly after officially joining the Theosophical Society and being exposed to the teachings of Swami Vivekananda, Frank Baum was inspired to write The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. It was published in Chicago on May 17, 1900. The book was adapted to other media numerous times, and ultimately it was transformed into the iconic 1939 film titled The Wizard of Oz. And then there's this from yogananda.net. Indian nationalists sent Swami Vivekananda as a sort of missionary to America, where he introduced yoga philosophy yoga philosophy in the 1890s. Vivekananda wrote to a journalist friend in India, "By preaching the profound secrets of the Vedanta religion in the Western world, we shall attract the sympathy and regard of these mighty nations, maintaining forever the position of their teacher in spiritual matters, and they will remain our teachers in all material concerns." And as some of you know, at the bicentennial of the country, 1976, the Smithsonian Institution selected twenty-six people, 13 colonies, two each, 36 people to represent those who had come from other parts of the world and had a great influence on the intellectual and spiritual thought current here in the United States. Swami Vivekananda was one of those selected. And you can still see in the Smithsonian a small display of what they had is at the time a very large display. Actually, they put it in 18-wheeler trucks and took it around the country. It was really quite impressive. Vivekananda was one of those 26. Swami Vivekananda's Raja Yoga, published in 1896, became a bestseller and had a lasting impact on American culture, also on English culture, and coincidentally also Australian. Wherever English was spoken, it was a bestseller. One small example here in America, Frank Baum, the author of Wizard of Oz, heard Vivekananda speak in Chicago and was deeply moved. This is still from yogananda.net. Baum's biographer, Evan I. Schwartz, argues that the quest of Dorothy, the Scarecrow, the Tin Man, and the Cowardly Lion are allegories for the four yogic paths that Vivekananda elaborated. And that's what we'll take up a little bit today and in depth next week. And this is from Finding Oz, How L. Frank Baum Discovered the Great American Story. Asked how he came up with this story, Baum, in an interview, described his extraordinary moment in the simplest terms he could. Quote, "It was pure inspiration," he said. "It came to me right out of the blue. I think that sometimes the great author has a message to get across, and he has to use the instrument at hand. I happened to be that medium, and I believe the magic key was given to me to open the doors to sympathy and understanding, joy, peace, and happiness." That's the end of the quote from Baum. The Wizard of Oz is a tale of transformation. Transformation from ordinary consciousness, symbolized by the dreary gray landscape of Kansas. That ordinary consciousness, if you have read Wizard of Oz, and Frank Baum was very acquainted with that part of the Midwest. He worked there as a salesman and other things, and so he knew it well. Ordinary consciousness, untransformed ordinary consciousness, is symbolized by the dreary gray landscape of Kansas. The transformation is to spiritual awareness, self-awareness. This transformation, and it happens for all four of the characters. Dorothy, as the karma yogi, the one who assists the others. She comes across these other three characters and takes them with her on her quest, giving them aid, and also, coincidentally, wonderfully in the story, they help her. The transformation of these characters takes place in a magical realm populated by all the familiar characters of fairy tale. A wizard, witches, terrible witches, helpful friends, and fiendish foes. And the challenging trials, all the challenging trials and challenges that make Dorothy's time in Oz interesting and meaningful. And I hope all of you take the opportunity to actually buy a copy of the book. You can buy them online very inexpensively, beautifully illustrated copies, some with the original illustrations. And read this story. It is really worth your time. It's fun, and particularly if you have children, read it to them. By the end of the tale, all four main characters, Dorothy and her companions, the Scarecrow, the Tin Woodman, and the Cowardly Lion, are each completely transformed. Let's begin at the beginning. As you may recall, Dorothy's journey starts with a cyclone, a tornado. It's described very movingly in the book. The movie doesn't take much time with it, but it's described very movingly in the book, and it's because it is the beginning of the transformation. Dorothy is taken away by this whirlwind, by this tornado, to Oz. It's an unknown land. No one knows where it is. I mean, no one's ever spoken of Oz to Dorothy. So the tornado takes her aunt and uncle have taken refuge in the cellar. But Dorothy doesn't get in the house in time to go to the cellar. So the house itself, Dorothy and Toto, are taken up and carried away to Oz. Now here's a little context for that whirlwind from a very different tradition, but a tradition known to Frank Baum. The Native American spirituality and sorcery, this is their term for what we would call yoga, as described in Chapter 3 of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, the power section. The term sorcery, we think of it as mumble-jumble chanting and incantations, as we've seen in the Mickey Mouse movies and so on. But sorcery is as practiced in the Native American tradition. If we look at it closely, we would call it yoga. But in any case, we're going to call it what it's called in their tradition, sorcery. Native American spirituality and sorcery. And we're going to look to a description from Carlos Castaneda's book, Journey to Ixtlan. Those of you who are familiar with Carlos Castaneda know that he was a student of Don Juan Matus, and Don Juan introduced him to their form, the Toltec tradition of sorcery or yoga. Here is what in the book Journey to Ixtlan, Carlos Castaneda is speaking to a friend of Don Juan Matus's, Don Gennaro, a friend and colleague. They worked together as teachers. Castaneda is speaking to Don Gennaro, a very powerful sorcery, about Gennaro's transformative experience. What happened when you grabbed your ally, Don Gennaro, I asked. It was a powerful jolt, Don Gennaro said after a moment's hesitation. He seemed to have been putting his thoughts in order. Never would I have imagined it was going to be like that, he went on. It was something like nothing I can tell. After I grabbed it, we began to spin. The ally made me whirl, twirl, but I didn't let go. We spun through the air with such speed and force that I couldn't see anymore. Everything was foggy. The spinning went on and on and on. Suddenly, I felt I was standing on the ground again. I looked at myself. The ally had not killed me. I was in one piece. I was myself. I knew then that I had succeeded. At long last, I had an ally. I jumped up and down with delight. What a feeling! What a feeling it was! Then I looked around to find out where I was. The surroundings were unknown to me. I thought that the ally must have taken me through the air and dumped me somewhere very far from the place where we started to spin. I oriented myself. I thought that my home must be toward the east, so I began to walk in that direction. It was still early. The encounter with the ally had not taken too long. And here's what Castaneda says about the necessity for Dorothy, her companions, and for us of spiritual transformation. This is from the introduction to Journey to Ixtlan. The full description of Don Gennaro's transformation takes about 40 pages toward the end of that book. It's well worth your time to read it. Just for those of you who don't know, because you weren't here at the time, I only know it by reading his work and knowing him personally. Swami Yogeshananda had very high regard for Carlos Castaneda and his books about his encounters and teachings from Don Juan. So this is from the introduction to Castaneda's Journey to Ixtlan. For the purpose of presenting my argument, I must first explain the basic premise of sorcery as Don Juan presented it to me. He said that for a sorcerer, and when we hear sorcerer, please think also it means yogi. He said that for a sorcerer, the world of everyday life is not real or out there as we believe it is. For a sorcerer, reality or the world we all know is only a description. For the sake of validating this premise, Don Juan concentrated the best of his efforts into leading me to a genuine conviction that what I held in mind as the world at hand was merely a description of the world. A description that had been pounded into me from the moment I was born. He pointed out that everyone who comes into contact with a child is a teacher who incessantly describes the world to him until the moment when the child is capable of perceiving the world as it is described. According to Don Juan, we have no memory of that portentous moment simply because none of us could possibly have had any point of reference to compare it to anything else. From that moment on, however, the child is a member. Member. Member of the description. He knows the description of the world, and his membership becomes fully fledged, I suppose, when he is capable of making all the proper perceptual interpretations, which, by conforming to that description, validate it. Does this not sound like what we're told? We project the world based on what we know inside. Carlos, the poet Goethe, described it very accurately in this very short couplet. A person sees in the world what they carry in their heart. He actually used the masculine pronoun because of the time he wrote it. A man sees in the world what he carries in his heart. But a person sees in the world what he or she carries in their heart. What we carry in our hearts is all our sense impressions, all of our past knowledge of the world, and then we create the world we see out of that. When he is capable of making all the proper perceptual interpretations, which by conforming to that description, validate it. For Don Juan, then, the reality of our day-to-day life consists of an endless flow of perceptual interpretations which we, the individuals who share a specific membership have learned to make in common. If I hand you a dollar bill, you believe that I've handed you something of value. If I hand you a $100 bill, you perceive that I've handed you something of great value. If you analyze it, that is just a piece of paper. The understanding that it has value is something that we share in common. It's one of millions of perceptions that we share in common and that we project out into the world. The idea that the perceptual interpretations that make up the world have a flow is congruous with the fact that they run uninterruptedly and are rarely, if ever, open to question. In fact, the reality of the world we know is so taken for granted that the basic premise of sorcery, that our reality is merely one of many descriptions, could hardly be taken as a serious proposition. Dorothy is taken up from the world in which all of her perceptions are shared. It's briefly described in the opening of The Wizard of Oz. And she's taken to a place where virtually none of her perceptions are now operable. Because of her nature, she doesn't freak out. She doesn't go crazy. She adapts. But it's one of constant surprises. A scarecrow who talks. A witch that is killed and whose slippers she inherits. And how they have magical powers, but she doesn't know that yet. Then they encounter a tin man, a man made entirely of tin, a woodsman. He talks too. And then they encounter a lion. Only in the world of fairy tale, of yoga, of sorcery, do such things happen. If you want to know what I mean, read chapter 3 of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. It's in Swamiji's Raja Yoga. It's in Swami Prabhavananda's How to Know God. There are many, many translations of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. We participate in a description of the world. We participate in it. And it is only one description. There are many descriptions. One of the things that happens as we go through our spiritual journey, doing our spiritual practices, is our description of the world subtly and slowly changes. It doesn't happen dramatically as it does in a fairy tale, not usually, though we may have some very surprising experiences along the way. Spiritual experiences and experiences that shake our belief in our description of the world as we know it. So next week, part 2, Baum's Tale of Wonders. Dorothy, the little girl who is a gift from God, her companion Toto, a little bit of everything, and her magical companions, a scarecrow wanting a brain, a tin man yearning for a heart, and a lion who believes he has no courage, go in search of a mysterious wizard who they are told has the power to grant all their wishes. Some hints about these characters are in the framework of the four yogas that Frank Baum learned from Swami Vivekananda. And you can see as we go through the story next week how this is very literally true. Dorothy, the gift from God, is truly a karma yogi. all of her efforts. Sure, she wants to go home, and she's going to see the Wizard of Oz to see if he can take her home. That's who she is. But all of her efforts otherwise are on behalf of others. She's perfectly selfless. She does not put herself first. The Tin Man yearning for a heart. As you read the description, he's a bhakta. He believes he has no heart, and yet his whole life is centered in love. And it's really a very moving character. The Scarecrow. Now, you know, these characters as interpreted in the movies, in the movie Wizard of Oz, they take on a kind of a comical tinge. But in the book, not so. The Scarecrow really does believe that his head is stuffed with straw. Headpiece stuffed with straw, as T.S. Eliot said. And he believes he has no brain. The lion that they encounter is weeping tears because he feels he has no courage. The Tin Man, Bhakta, the Scarecrow, Gyana, the lion, the king of the forest, Raja Yoga. Raja means king, Raja Yoga, the yoga of courage. Who is the wizard? What has the wizard created? This wonderful city of make-believe. The city of Oz, the Emerald City of Oz. And he's controls it all. The wizard is Maya. The wizard is Maya. You'll see. It's really very moving the way Baum weaves it together. As you'll see when you watch the movie, he's behind a curtain operating the levers and the wheels. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Pay no attention to Maya's magic. Mm. So this is who we'll talk about next week. And as you will see, Frank Baum not only incorporated many of Vivekananda's teachings into this book, but many of the other things from Indian folklore and mythology. The names themselves, we'll come across them next week. Let you know. So that's the background. What has this given rise to in you? What questions or comments do you have about all this? This is the best part of the hour, the conversation we have now. Somebody be brave enough to go first. Okay. Yes?
How would you describe the difference between fantasy and imagination?
Fantasy seems to come from somewhere even beyond imagination. Imagination is based in what we know, and we extrapolate from that. Fantasy seems to come from beyond what we already know. This is why the fairy tales are known as fantasy, not works of imagination, but works of fantasy. They come from beyond what we know. Others, there were some others. Yes, Uma, and then I think there was someone here.
I'm six.
No, who goes?
Oh, yeah.
When you said the wizard was Maya, I think of the scene where he's all big and bad, and the big head has the explosions, and I thought of Shakespeare's Macbeth, who says, "Full of sound and fury," signifying
very good, very good. That's precisely it. And what happens to the wizard?
He
turns out to be a phony, yeah. But he can't even manage to get Dorothy home. Somehow he blows it, and his balloon flies away without her being in it. It's really quite moving. That scene in the book. He can't quite pull it off. Yes, Uma.
This is so fascinating.
Yes.
So exciting. I was going to ask the same question, but then the answer came to me.
Yes.
That probably imagination has some basis in our experience,
mm-hmm.
which we only further develop.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to do with creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And fantasy is like totally taking a leap in mm-hmm. the unknown.
Yes.
And another classic that comes to my mind is Peter Pan.
Oh, yes.
So Peter Pan also seems to have said. Now, I have two questions.
Yes.
How does this sorcery connect with yoga?
Yoga is sorcery. And sorcery is yoga. It's learning to use the powers that are inherent within us through the control of our attention and concentration, so that we break through the program that was given to us, as Castaneda described, pounded into us by everyone we come in contact with in our youth. He doesn't mention, at least in that introduction, it is later introduced, but this idea of past life and the fact that we bring some sense impressions with us in our subtle body from past lives.
Nice.
But you're right. Imagination is an extrapolation with freedom. Freely associating what we already know.
And what's this connection with Vivekananda as inspiration for these Baums?
Well, Baum was just entranced with him.
Yeah.
When he saw him in 1893,
right.
And this is the first time he'd encountered him, he'd become a theosophist. So he was somewhat already acquainted with the ideas of Sanatana Dharma as embodied in theosophy. But theosophy was still very young itself in those days. And so they incorporated Vivekananda's teachings, the theosophists did, without attribution a lot of times.
Is it well known?
That Baum was... Yes, oh yes. I read to you from these works that show Baum was very strongly influenced.
In general, public is aware of this kind?
No. No, there was no mention of it in the credits for The Wizard of Oz, the movie. Yes, in the back.
Now this, teaching that you already are that which you seek.
Yes.
But yet it seems like each of the characters in The Wizard of Oz needed to go through that journey. Because, the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Lion all had opportunities to manifest or to exhibit what they believed was their missing quality.
Exactly.
So without the journey, I guess there's that paradox or whatever. They already are what they seek, but it seems also that the journey is in some way necessary for them to manifest.
Precisely. And it is for us as well. That's why we are alive, to manifest what we already are, because we don't believe it. If we believed it this instant, we would be transformed. But we need to visit Maya. We need to be in the grip of Maya to manifest that. And then we say, oh, I'm manifesting that. And then we discover through the learning of contemplation, concentration, and meditation, we begin to see the source of it. We begin to experience the source of it. As Swami Prabhavananda said, learn to feel that living presence. And we begin to learn that, we begin to feel that living presence, and we begin to sense, oh, that is the me of me. Not all of this acting out. The acting out is just a way of expressing it. And as Marcus Aurelius, the Roman poet, put it, that aspect of us that is manifesting all this, it loves to happen. It loves this journey. And this is what we find in the, particularly in the second half of The Wizard of Oz, after the wizard has departed and they go on. They begin to enjoy it more and more now that they're no longer looking to Maya to give them what they already have. Yes,
Brian. If you're going to talk about this next week, we don't have to talk about, but do the witches of the north, south, east, and west, and the flying monkeys and the queen's guards, do they represent something too?
Oh, yes. Oh,
okay.
Yes.
If we're
yes.
going to talk about it next
yes,
week.
Yes, yes. They definitely do.
Right.
Yes. All of them are significant. As I said, many of them, the flying monkeys you mentioned, these are right straight out of the Mahabharata.
Okay.
But he knew that they, in Mahabharata also it was referenced?
Is there a direct reference?
For, no, not direct reference.
Did Baum like know that the...
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes. As you'll see, the names for these characters are actually Indian names. The names for demons and other characters that are encountered.
People behave as they are, like, by nature we do things, like everybody. But is it not Maya doing, or we are doing our things naturally, like...
What do you think? Who is acting?
Both, sometimes. I'm confused.
There is only one ruler of the universe. There is only one divine being. We are the divine being having human experiences. So the divine being, through the instruments of its power, which are called Shakti, the power of manifestation, and the instruments of Shakti, which are called the gunas, tamas, rajas, sattva, they do all this. They do all this. As we'll see in other talks, all this is reflected in the mirror of the heart. And because it's reflected in the mirror of the heart, it seems as if we are doing it. The physical, psychological, psychical body. We're meant to think that. It's meant to be that way. Otherwise, the game could not go on. We love to happen, and we love to deceive ourselves. We are the divine being, deceiving ourselves into creating this world of manifestation. And as the man in the back said, we need the journey to come to the realization, ah, it was me all along. I always had a heart. I always had a brain. I always had courage. It was all there. As Vivekananda said, each soul is potentially divine. That doesn't mean maybe it's divine. It means it has the potential to be divine. It's all there. Potential. like the energy in a battery until you connect the two nodes of the battery, the two poles of the battery. The energy is simply potential. You connect the poles, boom, you have the energy. When we learn to connect the poles of our being, the good and the bad, all of the duality, when we learn to connect and see, where is the energy coming from to do all this? This is when we can dispel the illusion. And those of you who know the story, Dorothy always had the power to go home. I won't tell the secret of how, but she always had, at a moment's notice, she had the power to go home. Anything else? This is great. Yes?
I had written a little funny kind of thing about the word scarecrow.
Uh-huh.
If I could read that.
Please. Read it loud enough to get it on the recording, please.
Okay, so the scarecrow stopped eating because he was stuffed. And he'd had the last straw for being ignored, though he was outstanding in his field. While others knew he was for the birds. So if you see the scarecrow, don't be afraid to say, hey, as in,
hey,
yes.
And if it's not too corny, try to patch things up.
Good.
Because after all, he is one of your cronies.
Very good. Very good. That's would you email me that so that I can include it with this so because everyone won't be able to quite hear it on the recording. Please do email that and we'll include it with the notes. That's good. One of your cronies. That's good. All right.
Guess that's the last straw.
Yeah. But, you know, actually, if you remember in T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland, he borrowed that image of the scarecrow. Headpieces stuffed with straw. So, anything else? Well, for those of you who are new here, you won't know that there is a table with snacks inside and hot water for tea, and as soon as we get inside, we'll make some coffee so we can continue our fellowship and conversation inside. But if there are no more comments or questions, then I'll close with our regular chant for peace. Our beautiful translation by Swami Yogeshananda of this ancient prayer for peace. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the sky, and on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Om Shanti, Shanti, Shantihi. Peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. And if you read the introduction to Swami Vivekananda's Raja Yoga, if that actually prevailed, if there was peace, true peace, throughout, with every being in the universe, it would all disappear. Peace is the absence of vibration. So, dears, this was wonderful, this was fun. We'll have even more fun next week. This was the preamble. Next week is the payoff.
Yeah.
The story itself. And boy, howdy, it is such a story. The movie, of course, is a very abbreviated version of the story. There is so much more there. And they left out practically, in the movie, they left out practically all the allusions to Indian mythology that are in this story. Because it wouldn't have meant anything to anyone, or very few people anyway. But they still made a magical movie out of it. But the Munchkins don't really sing about being part of the lollipop, whatever it was. The Munchkins are more simple than that. But it was good what they did. They made
I forgot to add, my little girl, when she was 6 years old, she took a part in the play in the school.
Yes.
She was Scarecrow.
Yes. Oh, good. Well, there's been many, many, many representations of this. There were earlier silent movies made of this. It captured people's imagination right away. And just so you'll know, that starting in 1904 and up until the 1960s, Dorothy was among the 10 top most popular names for girls in the country. Direct connection to The Wizard of Oz. From 1904 to early 1960s, it was one of the 10 most popular names.
Just goes to show how profound Vivekananda's influence was in a subtle way.
Yes. And this business of Dorothy, the translation of Dorothy being gift from God, we'll explore that next week. Gift of the three graces, the three gifts are human birth, the desire for liberation, and a qualified teacher. These are the three graces. These are the three great graces. And you'll see that they're all in the Wizard of Oz. And the wonderful part about it is the qualified teacher he qualifies himself by being unqualified, by blowing it. It's very interesting. He teaches by his unexample. So let's go on inside and have some snacks and tea. Good.